This week on All About Android, we're going to dole out some gift-giving advice, and we're going to talk a little bit about the Qualcomm Snapdragon Summit. Also, Huawei is working on a new operating system. All this and more coming up.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
This episode of All About Android is brought to you by Slide Belts by Brig Taylor. High-quality, comfortable ratchet belts that are easy to adjust. Get a better belt for yourself and your loved ones this holiday season. Go to slidebelts.com/twit and use code TWIT for 20% off. And by ExpressVPN. Protect your online activity today. For 3 extra months free with a 1-year package, go to expressvpn.com/allaboutandroid. And by LastPass. Secure every password-protected entry point to your business. Join over 43,000 businesses and start managing and securing your company's passwords today. Learn more at lastpass.com/twit.
Hello and welcome to episode 398 of All About Android, recorded live on December 4th, 2018. We are your weekly source for the latest news, hardware, and apps for the Android faithful. I am Florence Ion.
And I'm Ron Richards.
And we are joined today by Juan Bagnell.
What? I get to come back? All right.
So, yes.
I'm so excited.
Hi.
So the listening and viewing audience doesn't know the behind the scenes tale of this episode, but
the saga that was
exactly the saga that was. I'm going to apologize in advance because I'm broadcasting from a hotel room in Los Angeles because I'm traveling today, and I was actually wasn't going to do the show. But Jason's off this week, and so we miss Jason, and I didn't want to leave Flo alone. But then I heard Juan was coming on the show. I'm like, I've got to do it. And then I was going to go to Juan's house and do it with him, but LA traffic got in the way, and so
yeah,
here we are.
Unfortunately,
I'm so glad you're back, Juan.
This time of day would have taken you like an hour and a half to get to me, but we were going to have a nice little two shot back here behind me. It would have been really cozy. My house still smells of the wafting aroma of freshly baked cookies that I was going to welcome you with. But alas, it was not.
And now we have to do that someday. That's the thing now. Now we have to do that. So next time
I'm totally down for tech geekery with baked goods. We can make that happen.
Sounds like my daily life.
Right? It sounds like a good life.
It is a good life. It's a cushy one. So before we, it's kind of been a little slow in the news realm. I mean, we've got some news that we're going to discuss today. We've got things that we're going to talk about. But we figured before we get into the nitty gritty of everything that's going on in the Android world, why don't we take a little pause and not exactly do a gift guide, because I know you've just been bombarded with gift guides like here and there and everywhere, but more like a look at what you can buy that's now on sale, because now is the time to do it. So that's what we're going to do today. We're going to go. That's what I've called
it. I believe we've called it holiday gift advice.
Yes. Holiday instead of gift, a gift guide. Suggestions. Advice. Not so much a guide, but just us telling you what our opinions are, because, well, that's why you tune in every week, right? Hopefully, please. Sure. Thank you for tuning in every week. And so I figured the best people to join me would be Ron and Juan, also because I got to just say Ron and Juan, and that sounded
we
great.
Rhyme.
Great duo. We should have been together. Yeah. I love the holiday, so I'm all about talking about presents. Let's talk about what you can give people for presents.
All right. I think that we are just going to go ahead and jump into the ultimate present for the Android user this year, which would be an Android phone. And we know there were definitely plenty of those this year.
I got to tell you, it's funny because, like, growing up, the holidays, whether Christmas or Hanukkah or whatever, there's always the big present, right? Like, that's the thing you want, you're going to get. And I saw it last year when my little niece got it. Unfortunately, she got an iPhone, which was the right decision for her. But, like, that's the big, like, ooh, a new phone is a big present to someone because it's not cheap.
Yeah, and I've been the uncle
and it's effective.
Oh, totally. And I've been that uncle to help outfit, where it's not even just, we got you a phone. It's, I know you want to do things with this. So let me see what you're into, and then we can look at a phone and maybe some headphones and then something to go with it. Or you're really into gaming and there's like a nice Bluetooth controller to go with it. And I think those kinds of gestures go a long way when you're working, especially when you're working with kids and parents. Just, you know, we're the ones that have all this tech knowledge. We're the enthusiasts. We're the fans. This is, I think, the perfect way to spread a little goodwill, a little holiday cheer.
Yes, funnily enough, the only thing my mother asked for this year was a Samsung fast charger for her Note 9.
That's great, though.
Yeah, except that it's like $80.
yeah, but it's not
a lot of money.
It's not a $1,000 Note.
Fair. Fair. Okay. So now we're talking about money and prices. I guess we're going to start at the like really high end with the phones. And so I kind of wanted to start us off by talking about the three kind of best phones of the year. What we talk about when we are giving suggestions to people, when they ask us for opinions, what we tell them. I don't know about you guys, but I'm still very much on the train of get the Google Pixel if you are going the Android way, and especially if you're not really keen on the Samsung way of things, because there's definitely, I mean, in the top three, I included two Samsung phones, the Note 9 and the S9, because it kind of just depends on like what you want from Samsung. But if you're not even looking at Samsung, you know, I definitely feel like the Pixel 3 is the one to consider, especially when you factor in just night sight alone. Holy cow. That feature is just
Night Sight is emerging to be the killer app for the Pixel 3. I've talked to enough people who got the Pixel 3 and then use it and have a transformative experience.
It is very transformative.
Yeah. Well, also, I've been very surprised that from the Pixel 2 to the Pixel 3, just how much of a reputation Google has already built up with general consumers for being the Google iPhone, where my dad really doesn't care about camera stuff at all. I mean, he also works in labs that have sort of sensitive security requirements, so he really doesn't care about camera tech one iota. But for him, he was really concerned about security updates, software updates, performance. His last Samsung, he definitely suffered bad from sort of that Samsung degradation of performance over 2 years with that phone. And so the Pixel became a really strong contender before he even talked to me about it. Like, he did his own like sort of consumer reports, deep dive on phones himself. That those messages are starting to resonate, you know, where the Pixel might not be exciting hardware for me. I'm really into hardware. It's become a much more accessible recommendation for people that they want something streamlined. They want something sleek. They want something that's going to, you know, perform out of the box, you know, the same as it does 2 years from now. And I think Google's made a very good argument for that.
Family friendly Google in a phone.
Oh, totally. Yeah.
Effectively.
It's a good phone. But the one takeaway from it is that, or the one negative against it is that it is an expensive phone.
Yes, it is.
Right? I mean, the starting price point is I would say cost prohibitive, especially when you're at a holiday kind of standpoint. So that's why if I'm giving a phone for the holidays, I go with something a little more affordable. And I honestly think just as good. And I would go the OnePlus 6T.
Mm-hmm.
Are you going to go Thunder Purple? Is that the one you're going to do?
You can't go wrong with Thunder Purple, I don't think.
It looks so good. I was very surprised by how much I like the Thunder Purple.
Yeah.
Starting up the OnePlus 6T over here, I was just kind of charging it off to the side. It is a pretty great device. It's just gonna boot right now. But the thing that's great about this is it's got that in-display fingerprint scanner, which is just like, come on. Super cool. Come on, you have my fingerprint.
Well, you know, now that you're on the spot, though, it's not going to do it.
Yeah, now it's not going to do it.
Of course. Live demo. But so so when my phone died and Flo, you were kind enough to give me the OnePlus 6, which I've just been loving, and I'll let you guys know, I've got a OnePlus 6T sitting in a box back in New York that I just haven't onboarded yet, but I can't wait to play with it because this phone just looks, it's a great phone. And at that price point, it is affordable enough to be a good president, like at $549 or so. What is the price?
Yep.
And also, if you're a T-Mobile user, it's net. You know, now you can bring it on your network. You don't have to worry about that aspect of it. So
that's definitely one of the biggest peace of mind aspects. Is again, you don't have to fight for some kind of compatibility. And if the person that you would be shopping this phone for is on Verizon, and they're in a good LTE area. This could even be a good fit for someone like that. It's sort of a cost-effective, high-performance hot rod of a phone. This has been a wonderful year for OnePlus, sort of growing up and maturing and becoming a stronger player. And now I'll be really curious to see if they can leverage that T-Mobile deal to kind of keep spreading the word, because I think we're in a sort of $1,000 phone fatigue for a lot of consumers out there. And it's not as much of a slight as it used to be to say, like, well, you can get like 90% of a top tier phone for like half the cost. People are a lot more interested in having a conversation about that, even if they ultimately don't decide to get it.
So what do you guys think we should tell people who ask us about Samsung? Because I think I hear from a lot of people who say, oh, I want to get an Android phone. And usually they're like, you don't think I should get a Samsung? And so I always sometimes feel like I'm a little on a different level, maybe because I am so into this world and I know all of the, like, the little phones that are getting announced, that sort of thing. Not the big phones that are just being, you know, blared all over, like, the TV screen. So, I mean, I would tell people to get Samsung if they want to stick inside that ecosystem and if they're just really comfortable with using it. Because there's no point in jumping to a new platform if you're already comfortable with doing something, right?
Well, and what you've invested into. If you were telling me that one of the things that you wanted to do in mobility was invest in a nice smartwatch, and you weren't already on tap for an Apple Watch.
I keep forgetting about the smartwatch.
I think the Galaxy combo there, there's a pretty strong argument for it. That being said, I do think there's still something worth suggesting to folks for like the Galaxy Note 9 being one of those top tier productivity devices. Mm-hmm. I like talking about phones that have some kind of niche appeal. And the Note isn't really trying to be the big screen solution for everybody anymore. It is sort of carving a slightly different path than the S series. The S9, I think, is actually kind of a harder recommendation in light of Pixels and OnePluses and even LGs after price drops and stuff like that.
I was going to say, I'm sure it's got one of the bigger price drops, though, for the holidays. Like the GS versus the Note.
Definitely. But I would still say that ecosystem, like you were saying, Flo, ecosystem is one of the stronger arguments, but the Note still has its own talking points separate from the rest of the competition.
And I was going to say that, you know, back in the day when you were dealing with somebody who wanted to switch from iOS to Android, that was a pretty big leap to take. Mm-hmm. And honestly, Samsung was a safe option because they had put into the ecosystem something like that. But Android has evolved to a point of an elegance where I'm less afraid to bring an iOS person over with a Pixel or a OnePlus than I was even a year ago. Like it is grown leaps and bounds. And so that, like, Samsung as the safe brand really isn't – it's pretty parity now across the different phones. And so, Flo, to your point, if someone's already in that Samsung ecosystem, it makes sense. But Juan, I think you're totally right with the Note. You know, like, the Note 9 user is a user who understands a stylus, is a little more productivity, could be an artist, could be like whatever the different kind of niche that you're talking about. The Note could hit that, I think, more than the S9. And that's a nice phone, the Note.
I was playing with that last week.
It's pretty.
The only thing I might say in terms of Samsung being sort of a safe choice for ecosystem is if you're dealing with any older family members who might have difficulty finding support, you will probably have still a slightly better ecosystem and infrastructure of support in the United States for a Samsung product than you might for a OnePlus. But again, we're talking about a very specific use case consumer, not what I would say is general all-rounder advice for buying these things.
The good news is that the Samsung and the Pixel phones, I mean, those are the phones to consider if you're looking just for camera, like having that camera in your pocket. But those aren't the only phones. And actually, Juan, I wanted to pick your brain about this because we haven't talked too much about this particular phone on this show just because we don't have it. So, but you do, and you've actually made, you're holding it up right now, you have stickers on a case for it. So we're talking about the LG V40 ThinQ.
Yes. So this will probably be my favorite phone of the year, and it's going to be one of the phones that I think I'm going to have one of the hardest times making a general recommendation for. If that person that is into mobile technology cares at all about audio, then I think the conversation starts and stops with LG. I mean, this is amazing performance still that has not been met by any other manufacturer out there. Now, the whole situation with five cameras, I think if you focus on the fact that there are five cameras on this phone, you'll miss part of the conversation where the main shooter on this has been very nicely upgraded over last year's V series phones. But for anyone who might be interested in learning a little bit more about photography or straying from just always using an auto awesome or auto HDR mode in your camera app, no other manufacturer delivers the complete from soup to nuts control and experience that you can find on a V series phone. Video controls are amazing. The still photo controls are incredible. I know a lot of people like to act like, oh, well, no one uses manual modes. But even when you shoot full auto, there are some really nice advantages in using those pro modes that you can do some pretty incredible things with this. I've now shot three videos using the cameras on the V40, and one of them I edited on the V40.
Wow.
And rendered a 4K video that was uploaded to YouTube. Like, I did the entire production from that phone.
See, and now that's a great point, Juan, because that's I know we're in gift guide mode and we're not in year end or year review right. mode or whatever. But I feel like this is the year that phones really, like the LG, broke into the world where you could just use the phone as your only device and do things like that. In terms of we saw with the Pixel 3, they made a big deal of the fact that Condé Nast used the Pixel 3 to shoot magazine covers with the cameras, right? Like, and now I'm seeing way more video editing happening on the phone, which is just as an old school, you know, cutting film to Avid to Premiere user, that just blows my mind.
Right, and it's not. A lot of people act like, oh, you've got this tiny screen and how can you do that? And the workflow takes a minute to get used to, and then you're off and you're cutting and it works a lot better than you would think it would. It's incredible. The first time I tried this experiment was on a Huawei P10. Was it P10 Pro or P10 Plus? I can't remember. But the bigger Huawei P10. And by the skin of my teeth, I was able to get a passable video out while I was working on a trip in Shenzhen. Now, it is not difficult at all to mix footage from different cameras, to import footage into your timeline. And you spend zero time using the cameras on the phone and then dropping those video clips into your timeline. So you don't transfer footage ever. The device that captures your footage, it just drops directly into the editing app that you use to finish the product off. And then you produce a reasonably high bitrate, high quality UHD video on the back end. And you use a couple different YouTube apps, you get it uploaded, get all your metadata done. And you legitimately can make an argument for this being a total content production platform. Now, obviously, you can do that with just about any Android phone out there. But again, having really good manual controls built in, having the wide angle shooter helps a lot if you're really into vlogging, because, you know, I would never use a selfie camera when I can shoot from a higher quality rear camera and not have to worry about my framing as much because it's a wider angle lens. This has worked very, very well for me for the last couple of years on LG phones. And then you just mix that in with some really fun multimedia tricks, the boombox mode, the quad DAC for the headphone jack. I mean, it's a very solid option that unfortunately will probably be overlooked by a lot of people because LG does a terrible job of communicating and reaching out to consumers and advertising their products.
I was going to say, I barely hear about this phone, except maybe I saw three flyers once in passing.
You know, what's funny is they did make a big media buy. So for outside of during the Halloween season, if you were watching TV on YouTube TV. Yeah, that's around my daughter's birthday, and she's a little goth girl already, which is hilarious. So during that buy, a lot of the ads you saw on YouTube TV were LG V40 ads. They had that whole thing like zombies and the five cameras, and I don't think it was a great ad, but they actually did put some advertising towards cord cutters. But you just never see from LG the consistency in communication, the outreach, the boots on the ground. you know, after a phone's launched, after a couple of weeks, you can pretty much count on LG sort of quietly walking away from the conversation, where Apple and Samsung just never let up. They never let you forget that their products exist. And that's really, I think, if LG really wanted to move more V40s and be a more legitimate part of that conversation, then that's key number one. That's A number one, what they need to be doubling down on, really working towards.
So in the realm now, let's move on to kind of like cheaper phones, because I know you've been talking about all these phones that are basically like 500 plus, which is great.
I actually have one more just to mention it, and then we can move on. I would not discount. I've started to see several of these in my area. For someone who is productivity or security focused, the BlackBerries are doing really well.
Oh, God, he brought the BlackBerry.
A BlackBerry key, too. Wow,
he just threw the BlackBerry in there. Like, I wasn't even.
That's crazy.
I'm doing this. If I were judging phones by how long they had my SIM card, then the Key 2 would be my top phone of the year. It was so hard walking away from this thing as a communications device. It's a miserable multimedia device, but I loved using this to actually interact and communicate with people and message and take phone calls and
stuff. For the executive in your life, put a BlackBerry Key 2 under the tree.
And I can't tell you, I'd pull it out and this was the phone that I got asked the most questions about. It's not like
anything
else out
there. Because it has a keyboard on it.
Oh, I'm telling you, keyboard shortcuts are really cool. And just the fact that without looking at a screen, I can rub a thumb over my fingerprint sensor, move up because I know exactly where the letter M is on my keyboard, and be auto-dialing my wife without ever, ever interacting with a slab of glass. That tactile customization works really well. So again, this is a niche product. This is not an all-rounder. No one's making the argument that your Key 2 is going to unseat a Pixel, but there is probably someone in your circle of family and friends who would like a hardware keyboard. And it was also it just scored that major victory where MKBHD did his camera test and the Key 2 beat both the V40 and the iPhone XS in a totally scientific study of camera quality. So, you know, it's going to be amazing.
I will give you the physical keyboard. I feel like there's an underserved population that would use a physical keyboard if done correctly on the right phone. I'm not surprised to hear it's working so well on the BlackBerry, because when I played with the Key 2, I definitely was impressed by that keyboard, but I can't in good conscience give someone a BlackBerry phone for Christmas.
What about a Motorola phone?
Motorola phones have always been good.
Moto made by Lenovo.
I've always been a big fan for the mid-range entry point Motorola kind of being a good option there, and the Moto G6. I feel like, you know, somebody gets that under their tree or under their menorah. I think that depending on the type of user that they need, of what they need, if they need a good solid phone that works by a company that has been doing it, you know, the longest of any, but Motorola's been around since the early days of Android. I like the G6 a lot. Juan, what do you think of the G6?
Oh, I've been a huge fan of Motorola's sort of like that boundary between Moto entry and Moto mid-range. Most of my family actually are on G4s and G5s.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
So my siblings.
This is the perfect holiday to upgrade them. Drop the 250 and get them the G6.
And you can get them this really pretty blush color that I have right here. This is one of the colors that's available. This phone is $250, as low as $11 a month, and it's compatible with all major U.S. networks, including Verizon, AT&T, T-Mobile, Sprint, and Project Fi, which we will talk about. I'm sorry about the fingerprints. Yeah. As you can see, that happens. We'll talk about Project Fi a little bit later in the show, just because we have a little announcement there as I drop this phone.
I mean, we're talking, you're shopping a phone for someone else. There could be that concern over, well, what carrier are they on? What compatibility might they have? Are they going to be concerned about using it? And it was Motorola's and Alcatel's. My wife was using those almost exclusively because she just wasn't super afraid of potentially damaging a $200 phone like she would be a $600 or $700 phone.
Oh my, it's the worst when you drop your brand new phone like days after right? you bought it. It's just terrible.
But it's so funny that because these phones are less expensive, it actually sort of encourages more. It's
it does
like a more
because
fearless
when you spend
usage.
Like $900 on something, yeah, you don't want to drop it. It's kind of a lot of money for a lot of people.
I really
people.
Believe that there's a whole contingent of people that are damaging their expensive phones more because they're trying to be careful, right? I've got a $1,000 phone.
I agree with you. I agree with you there. I think that there's an over-indexing of carefulness that leads to dropping on pavement and things like that. And when you have a Moto G6 that literally is $249, that becomes – it doesn't become – I mean I'm not you know saying that that's not an insignificant amount of money. For some people, that might be very expensive and totally get that. But in compared to the $1,000 phone, if you need to buy a new G6 at $250, that's less of a sting.
Well, just think, if you break the back glass on an iPhone, you could buy two Moto G6s. So there you go.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So now if you don't want to buy a phone for somebody this holiday season, there are other Android running things that you can choose from. And, you know, we'd be remiss not to mention Chromebooks here, especially considering the Pixel Slate that just came out. I mean, the reviews were in. It's pretty good for a tablet, especially. I mean, at that $599 price point, $600 for what is essentially a Chrome OS tablet. So you've got all the power of Chrome OS on there, including the ability to run Android apps, the ability to tap into Chrome extensions, the ability to have all of that cloud data of yours just synced through Google Drive and the Chrome browser. And it's just, it's a good kind of medium for those who maybe have been really looking for something that runs Android and has all their Google stuff, but is not an iPad. This is a great choice for anybody who is thinking, I just don't want to deal with Apple, but I really want a tablet. It's definitely the Pixel Slate on there. Now, if you're looking for something more traditionally Chromebooky, there is the Acer Chromebook Spin 13, which I haven't actually used myself, but it's getting a lot of positive vibage across, just because this is it's a powerful device. You know, it folds into a tablet. It has a stylus built right into it, which most of the Chromebooks do not have. It's got an 8th gen Intel Core processor inside, so you are getting that i5 speed that you would get in like a Pixelbook, but it's not a Pixelbook. So it's something a little different. If you wanted to go a little more traditional, you could choose the Pixelbook, and that would be maybe a little more affordable because it's about a year old and they've been knocking down the price. But this is a nice, like, hey, this is a brand new gadget. I'm going to put this under the tree. There's a lot of people who don't have this yet. So there is that. I don't know. Do you guys have any other Chromebooks or suggestions?
Or tablets.
Or tablets.
That's not underestimated.
I know Ron has some tablet suggestions.
I will continue to say the Asus ZenPad 3S10, which is my tablet of choice, it continues to be a good option for gifts. I don't even know what it's selling for these days. I'm looking that up right now. But I bought it over a year ago, and it's getting the Android update. It's getting the OS updates. It's doing, you know, and it's really possibly one of the best tablets I've ever owned. And right now it's on Amazon for, I don't even know where it is. You can get one for $290, which is not bad. So
no, that's really good.
I love that tablet.
I mean, especially seeing all these new like Chrome OS tablets that are coming out, these like flip and fold form factors, it makes me really sad that Lenovo didn't stick with YogaBook, where the Android version of that is still, I think, one of my all-time favorite Android tablets. I don't necessarily have another tablet recommendation, but I just remembered that I got to review an Android-powered dash camera this year.
Ooh,
and so
cool.
I don't know. Do you guys get to check out the Raven? It's raven.is.
No.
Is the website.
No.
And $299. It's a front end. It's a front facing and cabin facing LTE connected dashboard camera that you can also use it as a security device. It'll connect to LTE. It'll tell you if your car's moved. It'll tell you if there's someone like walking around your car or someone's broken into your car. It can record video snippets both internally and externally. It was a really fun car computer to sort of add into my dashboard. For someone who maybe already doesn't have an Android Auto compatible head unit or something like that, I really liked it. It was a fun little product. Another thing that I think would be an interesting add-on for the techier person, but you know, maybe you have an older car and you're looking at just having a better driving experience.
I do want to quickly touch upon the smart displays before we move on from the gifts.
I was going to say the Google Home Hub has got to be, it's at the top of my Christmas list, both to give to people and to get.
Okay. Do you know what color you're going to get? Because it does come in four colors.
I haven't picked exactly what color I'm going to get.
You got to tell Santa what color you want. So the Google Home Hub is just a great entrance into, if your house is not already covered in like seven Google Home Minis like mine is, because they are basically passing them out like candy at every house. The Google Home Hub is a great entrance into the Google Assistant world. There we've got, Amy Poehler is doing the Google Home Hub commercials. So it's great for using in the kitchen. It's great, it's a great little kitchen TV if you like that sort of thing. It's also a great bedroom, like photo album / little media center. And if you've got smart things in your bedroom, like bulbs, or maybe you've got outlets, or maybe you've got a Nest thermostat and some Nest things around the house, this is a really great idea to bring in. It pairs really nicely with all those different services. And because it's got Google Assistant built in, you get all of that great visual search data that comes up, you know, whether you want to look for directions or you want to know the weather, or maybe you want to play a game. It's also a great little item for kids' rooms. And it doesn't have a camera in it, which is the big selling point that Google wanted to make known, is that this is the smart display without the camera. It does have an ambient sensor, which kind of tones and adjusts the picture of the Google Home Hub so that your photos always look really great on it, but it doesn't have a camera. You can still do Google Duo calls through it, Google Duo calls. You just can't do video chat. But if you want to do video chat, there's also the Lenovo Smart Display, which comes in 8 and 10 inches. And that one is just a lot more powerful, has a 10-watt speaker in both models. Now, the 8-inch one is the one that I've been seeing the most on discount. The 10-inch one is kind of harder to find, sort of with a bunch of money off. But they're both really great. It just kind of depends on how big of a screen you want. And because you've got that Chromecast ability built into it, this is just like buying another TV. So kind of think of it as like, I'm buying a small TV that has the Google Assistant built in and a very nice photo slideshow ability. You know, how big do I want it to be? How much do I want to spend on that? And the Lenovo Smart Display is great just because it has that big speaker inside and that really nice vivid screen. If you really only care about the sound, though, JBL Link View is another option to consider. That one is not really on sale like the other two are, but it is out there, it is loud, and it is worth it if you are an audiophile who kind of likes the idea of having a centralized locale where you can kind of like go into your music and control things. And with the new software update for the Google Assistant on the smart display, you don't have to use your voice. You could just kind of swipe on the screen, swipe down from the top, and it'll give you this nice little media interface so you can choose from music, movies, or maybe adjust lights if you have those set up in your home. And I don't know if you guys have any suggestions on Google Home products, but I'm kind of steering people towards the Google Home Hub just because it's a great little photo album. And you could fill that up with pictures if you want, get it all set up for your family member.
I still hate that. I hate that relegation of the Google Home Hub to a photo album, because I feel like the device can do so much more. Right? I
mean, defending its honor, Ron.
I know. Like, this isn't the first time me and Flo have butted heads over this, because Flo, I know you are impressed by the digital photo frame aspect and the kind
I am. It's really nice.
And it gives a good presence in the room, or just showing you all the photos, and paired with Google Photos and paired with a Pixel 3, it's like a great combination to have. But the home automation simplification and the control of smart home stuff, the video aspect with YouTube, like I actually think those Amy Poehler commercials do a very good job of selling the product, of showing them cooking and watching a recipe video while they're making something, and having the Google Home Hub play some music. Although I imagine it's not the best device for music.
It's actually not that bad, and you can use it in a home group, so you can pair it with other home speakers, and then kind of have like a little bassy stereo sound if you can manage
it. On top of that, I was really glad. I mean, to Ron's point about defending the honor of the Google Home Hub, I was really glad that I think a lot of people have been overlooking the JBL Link. That to the same token, this is the solution you want if you want slightly beefier speakers and you're looking at some kind of nice front end for some IoT. And that is where I'm starting to finally let go of some of my skepticism with these home products. I was not there with speakers, but now in this new generation of connected cameras and, you know, I have three different apps that control my front door between locks and speakers and cameras and doorbells. Now I think these things are really starting to come into their own for helping consumers find a single point of control for all of these various home automation and IoT devices. And so now we've got a couple different flavors. If you want video calls, Lenovo's got a good solution for you right there. If you want something that's just like sort of a more pure Google experience, you've got Google solution. And then JBL, if you're a nerd like me, and it would not do to not have decent speakers on any kind of product that should be able to pump out some audio.
At the very least, you can hook these up into a home group and just make the magic happen. Yeah.
Oh, but I want to hook up a bunch of JBLs in a home group. I don't want just regular little speakers in a home group. That would not be okay.
Well, those are our suggestions for those of you out there, and kind of a little recap of the products that really have been catching our eye in the last couple of months. I mean, this has been quite a whirlwind year for device launches. It's been a big year for Android, and so you kind of can't go wrong. And, you know, if you need stocking stuffer ideas, those cables, most phones are losing their headphone jacks.
Cables are good, but also like bring someone into the smart home. A lot of those smart outlets now, like the Wemo smart outlets, stuff like that, are like $20.
Yep, add
which
one
are
in
completely
there.
In stocking. Yeah, completely yeah. stocking stuff for range, and just get someone a smart outlet and have them, and then that connects easily to Google Assistant, and have them realize how amazing it can be to hook your Christmas tree up and just say, okay, G, turn on the Christmas tree, and it does it, and it's magical, and you can set up a recipe. What do they call Google Assistant? The routine. You set up a routine to turn on the Christmas tree lights and turn on music and make a wonderful holiday playground thanks to your smart home. So just throw in one of those smart outlets. That's what I would say.
Yeah, but I do want to say. Oh, go ahead. Sorry.
No, after you, Juan. Well, after you.
No, I was just going to add to that like we got my mom a Google Home speaker, and I think it sat in the box for about a year, and then she got a smart light bulb, and that was the Trojan horse that got her into a whole bunch of home automation. It just became peanut butter jelly
time
after that.
The LifeX Small A19 is a great bulb. It's not too expensive either, and it's got a spectrum of color. I gave my mom one of those, and she just loves changing the light colors.
She loved it. She loved it. And she's like, and everyone who would come in, she would like, oh, and watch what I can do. Okay, and
it's purple. Now it's purple. Pink.
It's amazing. It was great.
I think something as simple as a light bulb or a smart outlet can really turn someone on to the smart home, and it's kind of amazing. But let us know what you're getting your family in the world of Android and electronics, or email us in and ask us for, hey, I need to get, ask us for hints. We'll do it on the next show. I'm buying for this type of person. What should I get them? You can email us in at, what is our email address? We are aaa@twit.tv. We want to hear from you. Let us know what you are recommending for the holidays. That'd be great to hear from y'all. So,
perfect.
Do you want to take a pause and thank our first sponsor?
Let's do a pause.
All right. So we want to thank Slide Belts by Brig Taylor for sponsoring this episode of All About Android. And as we've been discussing, the holiday season is upon us. You're shopping. You're trying to find that right present for the right person. And listen, if you're stressed out by trying to find a gift for your loved one that they're going to love and that's guaranteed to fit, look no further than Slide Belts by Brig Taylor. Slide belts are high quality, comfortable ratchet belts that are easy to adjust. Their patented ratchet design adjusts precisely to you with 32 adjustment options and no holes. And with everything ranging from unisex survival belts for adults to comfortable belts for kids, you're sure to find the perfect belt for that special someone on your holiday list. Slide Belts offers a one-year warranty, free exchanges, and no-hassle returns. This is such an improvement to the traditional belt because you can easily remove the buckle and mix and match with other straps for ultimate customization and versatility. Choose from full-grain and top-grain leather straps to high-quality canvas and animal-friendly vegan straps. Slide Belts can be worn casually around the house, at the office, or for any special occasion. And because it's so easy to remove, it's a great travel belt, especially while going through security. Slide Belts also offer watches with swappable watch bands for ultimate customizations. So skip the long shopping lines and give the gift that always fits. Go to slidebelts.com/twit and use code TWIT at checkout to receive 20% off your order. That's slidebelts.com/twit, and don't forget to use code TWIT for 20% off your order. And we thank Slide Belts for their support of the show and of our wastes. Thanks, Slide Belts.
I could always use more support for my pants.
Exactly. So could I. Trust me. All right, Flo. Let's with all the gift stuff out of the way, let's get into hardware.
Oh, boy. So I don't know if you guys were aware, but there's some people in Hawaii right now with Qualcomm. And there is a Qualcomm Snapdragon Summit happening in Maui where we are learning about a lot of new Qualcomm tech that's coming out in the future, the future being only a few weeks away because it's 2019 almost. We're almost done with the year. So today in particular, the Snapdragon 855 chipset was officially announced. This is the official coming out party for 5G, according to Qualcomm. This is the world's first commercial mobile platform, or rather, Qualcomm says this is the world's first commercial mobile platform supporting multi-gigabit 5G. Features a multi-core AI engine for three times the improved AI performance. The processor also has specialization around enhanced computational photography, which is going to really help with Google's phones and Samsung's phones and all those great phones that you know and love that can shoot all the photos that you need it to shoot. It's also optimized for gaming, and it's got something called Snapdragon Elite Gaming. No details there, but there's a name and a brand that is there. There's also new 3D sonic sensors for 3D ultrasonic fingerprint abilities that will work even with dirty displays or through a screen protector, which is kind of a big deal considering OnePlus kind of let us out of the gate with this idea of a fingerprint. Okay, we're seeing that we've got more foldable phones coming. We've got all this fun stuff. So pretty much the processor has been created as a way to prepare for the onslaught of what is probably going to come next year. Would you guys
think? Future's coming fast.
It's coming really fast.
You know what I think is really interesting about this launch, though, is how many experiential and lifestyle technologies we're talking about. And this isn't Qualcomm just sitting back and saying, oh, well, it's going to have this many giggle flips and this many, you know, mega bips. It's like performance and metrics and benchmarking like that are taking a backseat to we're improving your photos through the use of AI core style technologies. And we know game streaming is a really big deal. Mobile gaming could be this next killer frontier.
Got to stream that PUBG. Yeah. Only on a Samsung phone.
So I think it's really interesting. Like, the tone of the conversation over the last couple of years has shifted from, like, what's the best possible Geekbench score I can eke out of a mobile chipset to what are the different things that I can do with my pocket supercomputer and really making sure I've got the right hardware support for any new generation of software services.
Well, that goes back to what we were just talking about earlier about the pocket computer that is our phones is becoming more functional on its own. It's being fueled by this kind of stuff, which I think that's the interesting thing. To your point, we used to be about specs and speed and what it could do, and now it's about practical application, because I feel like we're over the hill of people understanding that these phones can be productivity devices or gaming devices or media devices or whatever device it can be. And now it's up to Qualcomm and other, you know, chip manufacturers to keep up with that, to drive that demand.
I'm also just kind of on the 5G front. I'm a little like, wow, 5G is here. But I'm, you know, I do know, and maybe this is a good segue into the next news item, Ron.
Well, yeah, so 5G is going to be here. It's not here yet, but it's coming. So as part of that kind of Qualcomm Snapdragon Technology Summit, Samsung and Verizon announced plans to release one of their 5G phones in the first half of 2019. So 5G is 7 months, at least 7 months away from being in our hands, a phone running 5G. It will include the next big Snapdragon mobile processor, but there's no word on whether this device will be Verizon exclusive or not. And it's actually very possible that Samsung's 5G phone is not the Galaxy S10, which is kind of, it would be mind blowing if you think about that. Motorola already announced its 5G plans with Verizon for the Moto Z3 and the 5G Moto Mod. Verizon's 5G network goes live in early 2019. So now the question is that, is it going to be the scramble to get the 5G phone, or is it going to be, let's wait and see how the 5G network develops and how the phones adapt to it? I don't know. I mean, Juan, do you think 5G is hype at this point, or is it inevitable?
Well, I mean, I think it's both, right? You know, I was really glad you brought up Moto. I was going to make a really tasteless joke about, oh, no, the first 5G phone is already here, ladies and gentlemen. Yep.
Moto's there.
Moto is there. No, I think the thing, and I actually spent a little time on my own personal podcast this morning getting a bit more political than I probably should have, and I'll save your podcast from that kind of soapboxing, but I think it can be both. I think what we're going to look at is a bunch of hype. I think we've got the telecommunications industry in this country really trying to affect policy as to how networks are managed and regulated. But at the same time, we haven't seen a significant infrastructure investment. We haven't seen companies doubling down to improve backhaul and servers and interconnections. So you might get the little 5G pop-up at the top of your phone screen, but is that really going to come with a practical improvement in performance? I think we'd be right to be skeptical for over the next year, maybe even 2 years, in the much the same way that we went through that 4G to 4G to LTE transition in years past.
I was just going to say, looking at, because the last time a G related thing really impacted our industry was 3G, right? Was the move from, and I don't even remember what was going on before 3G, but like I remember 3G as being a moment in time where like, okay, these are the high speed data network. You can push video, you can push media. It's going to work on in a cellular network wherever you might be and that sort of thing. And to be honest, the 4G, the 4G, and then the emergence of LTE really hasn't had impact on the marketplace, I don't think. It's not like everyone's like, oh, I need to get an LTE device. It's just rather like, now the devices do this, right?
And well, so and I think a big problem was we went through that transition from 3G to 4G with companies playing fast and loose on what the definition of 4G was. And so you had like AT&T was really late to building out their LTE infrastructure in a lot of places and played the, well, it's 4G data speeds, but it's really some variant of 3G technologies. And I think I think consumers are going to get burnt out on it, on 5G discussion too, when they get their 5G capable phone, they're on the 5G network with Verizon, and then they're still generally getting around the same data speeds with generally the same reception in the same areas. And that doesn't really mean anything different, but they spent a lot of money and they probably got a more expensive cell phone plan to get it. And then a couple years later, once this is all matured, we'll take it for granted that we've got 200 to 400 megabit download speeds in urban centers on all of our devices. And we'll just sort of lobster pot our way into what 5G should be. Because now, I mean, if you try and go back to CDMA 3G on a phone, it's really painful. It's really bad. But no one acts like you were saying wrong. No one acts like LTE is some big hot selling point on their phones. Now we just take that for granted. I think in about 3 years, we'll probably feel the same way about 5G.
So I think that is a fair point, because there was one thing I was reading on, David Ruddock was tweeting on Twitter today, which is where people tweet. And I just came out. And
I like the show for its accuracy. I really feel like we...
Just had to connect that to the verbiage there. But So he had tweeted about the fact that we still don't have the kind of prominent infrastructure out where it matters, which is in the suburbs, which is where Americans live, because it's really great that the metro areas have like all this crazy fast speeds. Like, that's great. But what if us, what about those of us that live in the burbs, darn it? Like, those of us who like to talk on the phone, you know, who just want to sit on the balcony and talk on the phone. How are we supposed to do that when infrastructure is just not there?
Yeah, you know, we can put the fastest router on your home connection, but if you're on, you know, 1 megabit DSL, it doesn't matter if you've got a really hot Asus gaming router.
Oh my gosh, I feel like a lot of people do not understand that outside of like metro areas, broadband is very, it's very difficult to get the kind of broadband speeds that you want. And to be able to afford it, because I definitely have had talks with my neighbors about the fact that can't stream on Xbox, can't play live with my friends because like the Comcast bill is just too darn much. And I think that we get really hyped up about all these technologies because they, oh, it's so great to have like humanity is really building up things. And oh my gosh, we're going to get faster and stronger and better. But you guys, if the infrastructure is not there, it's not actually getting to everybody. It's only getting to a small subset of people so that companies can have the claim to the game. But
not to rain on the parade here, because I agree with you. I mean, I firmly believe in data, you know, high speed data access for all and every aspect that we can get. But these are still companies that are needing to turn a profit. And so if you need to spend money to provide infrastructure to ensure that 8 million people in Manhattan have great cell service versus 8 million people spread out on a third of the center of the country, they're going to focus. I mean, it's easier to do one small, dense metro area. Right.
Well, so you're totally right there. But because we are in this sort of flavor of digital divide, the people who are already most vulnerable in our economy are going to be the ones that are punished the harshest under this type of purely capitalistic examination. When we also need to talk about how much money in public infrastructure, in taxes, in fees on your bills goes towards the bottom line on these telecommunications companies, and they're not delivering improvements to those people who are most vulnerable in our society right now. That's why we've given them sweetheart deals for zoning. That's why we've given them tax breaks. That's why we've given them these infrastructure plans. We were supposed to have fiber through Verizon, Comcast, AT&T, and they pocketed that money. And we were talking around $400 billion worth of investment that just never materialized. And then you can look at more rural experiments and suburban experiments like Chattanooga, Tennessee, where a very small grant from the Department of Energy got them gigabit broadband before anyone else in the country. And now it's a crazy profitable. It's one of the highest rated services in the United States. We can do this, but it will cause it will require us to take an examination, a re-examination of how we do business and who actually gets to manage and safeguard the infrastructure that taxpayers paid to build. Maybe it shouldn't be a Verizon. If Verizon can't make a good faith effort to extend some of these services to people who are, you know, less urban, less, you know, centrally located in dense population centers.
I feel like go ahead, Ron.
I was just gonna say this got heavy very quickly.
I really tried to spare because this was like one of my talking points this morning on my podcast, and I was like, oh, you know, I covered it then. I don't need to harass people and keep soapboxing. So I was ready for that one, Ron.
Oh yeah, and I was gonna say don't not soapbox for us, please. It's fantastic. It's good content. But wow, it went from just like, hey, is 5G gonna be a fad or a hype to like, you know, some real civics stuff.
I feel like us discussing it, though, like I feel like that discussion kind of adds more credence to the idea that it is maybe we have to look at these things in a broader context, not just like there are a bunch of journalists in Hawaii right now learning about new processors and like, yeah, the hype is real there. But once you come back down to like Earth, here's the real deal is that there aren't that many cell towers around.
Well, and those were some of my hopes for 5G. Is it not necessarily what we can do with our phones, but if we could work on an infrastructure plan, if we could work on like broadband backhaul plan
to make it accessible just for absolutely everybody.
I have so much family in rural New Mexico that will never, never be cost feasible to roll good cables out to their locations. But they could set up some crazy antennas, and 5G would be the perfect platform to do that, except that they're still so far from major server clusters that they'll get a 5G signal that's basically connected to a 1 megabit download again. And what I'm really hoping to see is an infrastructure where we could democratize healthcare, democratize education, democratize banking and financing, and make people more competitive on the world stage. 5G could be an amazing technology for that, but we've got to get servers and infrastructure to those people. Even if it's wireless, we've got to get that accessibility out to more people.
Is this a good time to wonder what Google's doing with all that dark fiber?
Oh, gosh, yeah, I so want bad.
Right? I don't know. My assumption is that we all stopped asking them that about 3 years ago. So I'm guessing it's being used in some capacity now. But or it's just it's not as good as the fiber of today is. But yeah, no, I 100% agree with you there, Juan. Totally. That's
no, but it's, you know, that those kinds of like it's like the opposite of a conspiracy theory. It's like an I hope it comes true theory.
Optimism?
Something.
Optimism?
An optimist theory? We should start making our own optimist theories. Like Google sitting on a ton of dark fiber, and if they just light it up tomorrow, maybe we'll get a new amazing cell service competitor or something like that. I want so bad someone to be more disruptive in this space.
I feel like this is a good stopping point for us to kind of move on to another kind of disruption that's happening in another kind of space, which is the disruption of ad fraud. Which is just a nice little way that things have been working out. So last week we had discussed kind of the shady dealings of Cheetah Mobile's apps. So Google has since removed both CM File Manager and Kika Keyboard as a result of its own investigation. It had found deceptive and malicious behavior going on, which... yes, that's ad fraud for you. It also removed the apps from the AdMob ad network, and those two apps alone accounted for 250 million downloads. So imagine all the impressions and that were being sent to those people that were opening up those apps, and you know all the times that those were downloaded, and how much money was frauded off of those downloads. So Kika Keyboard is the top keyboard app in the Play Store, which it just kind of adds insult to injury because that top Play Store app was also using you to push a couple of cents over to some random people. Cool. This follows last week's. So all this little drama follows last week's removal of Battery Doctor and CM Launcher. And it's worth noting that there is this really great BuzzFeed investigation that kind of went into this. It's totally worth reading through just what has been going on with Cheetah Mobile. So Cheetah has disputed the findings in the report, and then Google took a week to investigate and ultimately decided to pull the apps after it found that there were just too many cases of fraud. And Google says its investigation continues, but that more action is likely. I wouldn't be surprised if all of the apps made by this... I wouldn't be surprised if this company was just banned from the Play Store, which kind of brings me to think about, you know, the Play Store has always been this sort of, I don't want to say Wild West, because it's definitely been reined in much more in the last couple of years, especially because of all the security vulnerabilities that have kind of been introduced to Android and just trying to change around that. Google's really been trying to change around that narrative. But I feel like because of them trying to really change around that narrative, there's no more room for error. If you are doing something bad, you are done. You are banned. You are locked out. The gate is up. It is. The dogs are out. You're not getting in. No, do you guys feel the same?
And I was going down your animal metaphor path there, but yes,
it was a medieval metaphor. I was really trying to get into.
Before I hear what you think of the metaphors, did you have any of these apps installed on any of your devices at any moment?
I think I had Battery Doctor. I think I suggested Battery Doctor in like a roundup. I think I suggested
we did that last week. I don't hear. I had the File Explorer. I had installed that one. I don't know if I brought it to the arena or not, but with as prevalent as these apps were, I'm fascinated by see who actually had them or not.
Yeah, I mean the File Explorer would have been up my alley, but I had I had a lot of problems with Astro. Astro was my file browser of choice, Astro. And then. they started doing a bunch of not quite shady, but not quite kosher. We're going to be your system cleaner and we need access to a whole bunch of other things on your phone. And we're going to start sending up your data and you have to know that we're sending up your data and you can opt out instead of opting in. And so I walked away from them too, but CM would have been something that I would have jumped on. It's just, I already had a solution and then that solution burned me. So I've been trying to pay a bit more attention to that.
Yeah.
It's like usually a good way to, well, listen, if you've got any of the apps that are mentioned in that BuzzFeed investigation or any apps from Cheetah Mobile, just, well, you're making somebody very rich overseas right now.
Yeah.
So good on you, I guess.
And you're not getting your cut. I feel like we'd be less upset.
Yeah, if everyone got a cut of that. Yeah, but I still say this is the tip of the iceberg. I think there's more of these are going to emerge as we go into this, as Google's getting more involved and looking at what's going on, exactly going on with these apps. I think this is that we're gonna see more stuff like this for sure.
No, so we've been super concerned about privacy, but then also we've got a lot of legislation coming down on content too. So I think we're going to see both Apple and Google getting very draconian in how they police their app stores. Yeah.
Ooh, draconian. Agreed. The visuals that brings up.
So switching gears and pulling a story out of the All About Tizen file that our good friend Mateo would love to hear about. Our friends at Huawei are reportedly hard at work on a new mobile operating system to replace Android on its devices. The VP of Huawei Mobile products confirmed this was under development. And it must be developed as a backup plan in case of a major changes to the Android landscape. And you might remember a few years ago, Samsung did this with Tizen. At the time, it was rumored to be a possible replacement for Android on its devices. That didn't end up happening. So who knows? I don't think this is something to get, you know, kind of in a panic about, because I feel like this is due diligence on a company's like, hey, we have a reliance on another piece of software made by another company that we don't control. We really should have an operating system in case we need it. I feel like that's where it's filed under, and it may never even see the light of day.
I completely agree. I'd be very surprised if every major manufacturer out there wasn't working on some similar initiative. LG with their investment in different what was it, WebOS that they had? Did I make that up?
Yep. Okay, no, you're right. I was just racking
my brain as well. I think you're right.
Yeah, sorry. I just literally like disconnected from my memory for just a second there. But then also, you know, Samsung and Tizen, I think there's always a danger of some kind of instability when we know that there is something on the horizon. We know that there is a Google project operating system that is being tested and worked on right now. And we don't know what that's going to resemble, what the relationship in manufacturers is going to be like. I think it's just good, like you were saying, Ron, I think it's just good business to have some kind of continuity plan in place in case something comes down the pipe and it prevents the company from making the devices that they really want to make. And also, I think Huawei is definitely looking at how can they maintain a market position when there's so much ill will surrounding that company here in North America right now. And they're looking at the number two manufacturer spot. They want to be the number one. They need to be able to safeguard and prevent anything from disrupting their ability to produce phones.
Yep. So that is that going to be a different store? And
it's the big red nope button. No one, I think, wants to pull that trigger. Samsung,
legitimately. They have money, though. These companies have money to invest in that kind of development.
But I think there's also, not to go back to the political aspect, but there's after seeing what happened, you know, this year with the political world and trade and all this sort of stuff, there's a good chance that a Chinese-based company doesn't want an American-based operating system.
It's very true. Well,
and looking at what happened to ZTE, you know, I think Huawei would be very concerned about similar punitive measures regarding past business practices. They have a good reason to be concerned in this current climate. And so, again, I don't think anyone really would want to. Samsung sounded like they were getting close. They were releasing a few Tizen phones in very limited numbers and in very, you know, sort of restricted markets. But no one really wants to do that. When there's an infrastructure, when you already have a continuity of consumer behavior, when you already have the infrastructure in place, no one wants to divert from that. That's a big ask. But if Project Fuchsia or whatever Google's next gen operating system is.
I was going to ask you to whisper what you were referring to earlier.
but if you know something happens and that gets in the way of Huawei's business designs or gets in the way of how they want to monetize services or gets in the way of anything that they've got on the docket, then they have a fallback plan. It's not a good fallback plan in my opinion, but it's something that they can. Exactly. It's something that they can count on for some kind of stability.
I have a fallback plan. You guys want to know what mine is?
Let's hear it.
SF Tourist. Tourist Guide. Yes. That's my backup plan. I'm going to give specialized tours of the Bay Area. That's my plan. I already have this whole.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So it's not a backup plan for your phone. It's a backup plan.
No, it's a backup plan for my life. It's the same thing, right? You know, it might fail. So you got to have a backup plan. So, you know, if I fail, you'll see me give private tours of the Bay Area to Romanians.
That might be a good moment to stop and thank our next sponsor. Because, you know, security and protection is so top of mind these days. And so we want to thank ExpressVPN for sponsoring this episode of All About Android. And with all the recent news about online security breaches, it's hard not to worry about where your data goes. Making an online purchase or simply accessing your email could put your private information at risk. We're all being tracked online by social media sites, marketing companies, and your mobile or internet provider. Not only can they record your browsing history, but they often sell it to other corporations who want to profit from your information. That's why I decided to take back my privacy by using ExpressVPN. ExpressVPN is easy-to-use apps that run seamlessly in the background of your computer, phone, and/or tablet. It turns on with only one click, and it secures and anonymizes your internet browsing by encrypting your data and hiding your public IP address. It allows you to safely surf on public Wi-Fi without being snooped on or having your personal data stolen. It's rated the number one VPN service by TechRadar and comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee. And it costs less than $7 a month. It's so affordable. If you don't want to hand over your online history to your internet provider or data resellers, ExpressVPN is the answer. Protect your online activity today and find out how you can get 3 extra months free with a 1-year package at expressvpn.com/allaboutandroid. That's expressvpn.com/allaboutandroid for 3 extra months free with a 1-year package. Visit expressvpn.com/allaboutandroid to learn more, and we thank ExpressVPN for keeping our data safe. With that said, let's go right into the apps. So it's not Google Dark Fiber, but it is Google and the letter FI, Flo, right? And your initials are FI.
My initials are FI. Yes, it's true.
I didn't realize that. You're like Google Fi. Why aren't you Google Fi, Flo?
Well, not as long as you don't include my middle initial. I do have a middle name.
Right.
Which shall remain secret.
Exactly. So, you know, typically we have the show on Tuesday. We always have the show on a Tuesday. And typically Google makes big announcements on Wednesdays. So we're talking a little bit about last week's news because it's good news and it's news that you should know. So in case you missed it,
if you remember, it got leaked last Tuesday.
That's right. It did get all the days blurred together in my mind.
Yeah, BGR broke the embargo, we knew it was coming, but it got confirmed on Wednesday.
And we had
wondered
about it, like what it would be like and if we would want that. But it turns out all that stuff came true, which is great. It's great for all of us because it introduces more choice into the consumer landscape. So Project Fi has been officially opened up to more phones, including Apple iPhones. Now, the project has been dropped, so this is no longer in project mode. It is now just Google Fi. So that's it. Rebranding. We're here. Drop the project. This is a bona fide thing, baby. It's a bona fide Fi.
You know it's a mature Google project when they rebrand it.
Precisely.
At least once.
Yep. It's for reals now.
Yep. Even the logo and everything. New animation. So multi-carrier switching will only apply to Fi compatible devices like the ones that they've supported for months and years, which means that there's a little bit of weirdness when it comes to bringing a phone in from another realm or bringing an iPhone onto the network. The new phones /devices, whatever you decide to bring on, will simply use Fi locked to T-Mobile's network, and they won't get the recently announced VPN encryption which is kind of a bummer. They will get, however, pay as you go so that you can have that ability. You only pay when you're using it. Contract free pricing, which is kind of, you know, one of the reasons you might be interested in Fi in the first place. International coverage, which is also really great. Anybody who travels a lot all over the world, and additional data only SIMs at no charge, which can be really helpful for those of you who are traveling a lot and maybe have other phones that you have to account for. And I feel like that is when you would consider Fi for your non-Fi phone. Fi, Fi, Fo, Fum.
No.
So you don't think this can compete as its own sort of MVNO? You think that people should stick with,
I think,
like,
if you have a Fi enabled phone, and I think with the discounts that they offer people on phones, like when they had that Moto X4, I thought that was a really good deal, and I was telling people about that last year, like, hey, if you're looking for an affordable phone out of the gate and you're trying to switch carriers, maybe go this route. I think that if you're bringing a non-Fi phone to this because of some of the restrictions that exist for iPhone users and some of the restrictions that exist for other Android phones, then maybe you would only consider this, hey, I'm going overseas, I want to make sure I could use WhatsApp, you know, and Allo, because I know people are using Allo. At least with me, they are. Then you would just get a data-only SIM. And how easy is it to just buy something here in the United States to bring with you overseas? That, I think, is just worth the easiness of that, just to be like, click a button, have a SIM card sent to you, and then boom, you have service when you get to a new country. That is very helpful.
Yeah, I mean, that's what kept me on Fi for so long. But both my wife and I have pulled the trigger. We're now, our main phone lines are Fi phone lines now. And she's using it on a properly supported LG G7. Right now I've got the Fi SIM in my V40, and I tag team between my Fi phone number and my old Google voice number, which I basically just use only on data. And it's been a great twofer. It's like having a multi-SIM device, but not really. And I can still get everything I need done on it. I think now this does help kind of push Fi into being a more legitimate option for someone who might want to shop something a little bit different. They get good coverage on T-Mobile in their area. I think this was a pretty savvy move, because a lot of these things that people are going to look at might be deal breakers, like that VPN, I don't know, are really going to resonate with someone who was looking at a good, cheap MVNO. And then also you get the peace of mind of any kind of travel. So even over T-Mobile's plan, which is, you know, more cost effective for data here in the United States, if you really do use a ton of data and you hit that unlimited cap, but you're on 2G or 3G data overseas. And, well, that's a no-go for me.
Oh, it's the worst. Yeah. When you show up and you realize that nothing is actually loading, and that your whole plan to have service overseas is just being completely foiled.
Yeah. It's funny because I'm on T-Mobile. I'm on an unlimited both domestic and internationally on T-Mobile, but your mileage may vary when you go overseas. But for some reason, I'm afraid to pull the trigger on Google Fi. And I don't know why. Like, I'm sure if I ran the numbers, it probably would be cheaper for me in the long run. But for some reason, I like the peace of mind of being with a network, even though I'm not even under contract anymore. I can't mentally make the leap to this paradigm of the service.
But I'm sorry. I was just going to say, like, a biggie for me, and I think for a lot of people, is you're tripping over T-Mobile stores in most urban areas, right? You know, like, again, it's
bright those pink lights things emanating.
Totally.
Everywhere.
You've got Magenta, and, you know, I can go and get help there if I have a problem. And you don't get that with an MVNO. You don't get that with Google Fi. I keep wanting to call it Project Fi. But especially because you have a tech component, you know, especially a review component in your job, I really liked sticking with a Fi SIM as, like, my review SIM. Mm-hmm. And then you can disable it for as long as you want, and then only fire it back on when you need it. And it kind of created like a little walled garden that I could review the phone, still have access to all of my favorite data and services, but then shut that off when I didn't need it. And I wasn't even in danger of accidentally giving out my own personal phone number. So it's silly, but I might set up a family plan just to get a second Fi SIM.
I was going to say, this sounds like a good
disabled.
This sounds like a good idea for any parent out there for the holiday who is maybe bringing home a phone and you don't want to give them full access, you want control over it. Get this. And then that way, if the bad grades come in, you go, sorry, no Fi for you. Yeah.
The interesting thing about the Google Fi announcement that I thought last week, I was talking to a friend of mine who is, you know, who's not one of us in the tech world, but knows phones and has a Pixel and things like that. The fact that they announced this with the deal that they also gave you $1,000 in Delta Airlines credit if you switch to Google Fi, that got more people's attention than the promises of the service. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. It was like, oh, hey, if I switch to this, I get $1,000 in airfare. So smart on Google, I guess.
No, very smart. Again, it's like they're learning these lessons where people want other perks, right? It's not just like, oh, you get great service at a great cost. Now it's also like, oh, and you get your airline miles and you can get what? Didn't they have the G7 for like $300 at one point during the Black Friday sales? I mean, just some crazy deals. And then you dig into the plan and it's pretty competitive against any of the other major carriers. I think they're starting to play this game smarter, and it does. I think it is deserving of leaving project status now that Google looks like they're taking it seriously.
It's all grown up. So moving on. It's all grown up. So one technology that might not be grown up. Actually, this is funny. This came up because last week on Twitter, I think it was last week. I tweeted on Twitter, Flo, and I said, does anybody actually use AR? Right, and everybody was like, oh, Pokemon Go, blah blah blah. But like beyond Pokemon Go, are there any AR apps anybody's actually using and enjoying? And this actually sounds like a good implementation of AR. Google has virtualized the museum in the Google Arts and Culture app. Will allow users to view all of Johannes Vermeer's works in an AR experience. And you might recognize Vermeer's work. He did The Girl with the Pearl Earring. That's housed in the Maritushus Museum in The Hague. They worked with a number of museums across the world that housed Vermeer's art to create the AR experience. And they've got high-res digital images all scaled to each other, so relative size of each painting is demonstrated. And if you could do that across, like, if you can bring the museum experience to me with my phone and AR, that's a cool implementation of it. But it's neat to see Google doing cool stuff like this, trying to make AR work and do more than just stormtroopers in your photos. So
yeah, I agree. And what a great like educational tool to do with the kids too. Like know.
I still say AR's best application is education.
I agree. I wholeheartedly agree.
Until we can get other heads-up displays, because there is an app on the Fruit phone that I really like called AR Runner, which you look like such a dork, but it is genuinely fun, sort of like tricking you into running shuttle runs, and I desperately want it on my Android devices too. And, you know, it really, the killer app will be once I don't have to hold my phone in front of my face while using this sort of AR workout game. When I can just have that go to like a pair of glasses or, you know, some other type of face computer. Until then, this is exploratory education. I don't know that we found our gaming killer app for AR yet. Not like VR, where you can have a whole bunch of different experiences that are now becoming pretty well mature. I think the idea of exploring a space and bringing students along for kind of a different type of experience like this is probably the best bet for AR in its current form.
I want to move on and explore something new with you guys. So this is something I haven't personally explored yet. I don't know that I'm very curious about it, especially after reading Andrew Martonic's write-up on Android Central today about YouTube Music. So they're, you know, very good write-up. Go check it out on Android Central if you have a chance. The article is basically about what a horrible replacement YouTube Music is for Google Music. Now, I am personally, a couple months ago, we had a show where we talked a lot about the music services we used. If you want to go through the archives and maybe check that out, it was a great discussion that we had about what we're using. I'm a Spotify person. Ron, if I recall correctly, you're still a Google Music guy.
Google Play Music, true till death.
And this is going to be really, really... Juan, do you use Google Play Music?
I'm with you on Spotify.
Yeah.
I ran into my first device limit on Google Play Music and got a lot of attitude in getting my my slate cleared and let it lapse and never went back. So I'm with you. I like something that's a little more cross-platform and doesn't seem to give me grief if I have 20 different review devices all signed into the same account.
Well, for those out there who are using Google Play Music, just a couple really quick things to know about this particular article. Andrew says it's unfinished, lacks features, not worth the $10 a month, doesn't work with Google Home or Android Auto, which is quite a bummer. Reliance on music videos is silly, to say the least. And its saving grace is that it has auto-generating, never-ending playlist based on songs from your listening history. It removes ads from YouTube, and it doesn't have a device authorization limit like Google Play Music. So, Juan, maybe this is your chance if you want to check this out and see if you want to try something different. We got to go to our corners and check this out ourselves, I think.
It's a wait and see for me.
Yeah,
still,
I agree.
Because a lot of the things that I would want, I want Google Play Music with no device restrictions. That's all I want. I just want that. And YouTube Music sounds like it's still different enough that I'm in kind of wait and see mode. Will it pick up a few of those features that I like from Google Play Music? I still have a majority of my offline music collection uploaded to Google playing music that I can kind of tap into if I want. I mean, those types of things mattered to me on Google Play, and it doesn't look like YouTube is heading in that direction yet. And if they do, and we can get rid of device restrictions, then I'm totally on board. But I'd still probably go with an ad-free YouTube subscription and hope that they just keep bundling YouTube Music alongside it.
Yeah. Well, YouTube Music, I'll tell you what, though, didn't make Google Play's Best of 2018 list. No, it didn't. But its cousin, YouTube TV, did, which I wholeheartedly agree with. So after we talked a couple weeks ago, we said voting was open for the Best of 2018. And after that voting happened, Google unveiled the Best of 18 list. And the fan favorites of 2018 on the game side is PUBG Mobile 1, which is no surprise. Like I mentioned, the app was YouTube TV, which is great. They announced a whole bunch of movies were the best movies of 2018, including Black Panther, Avengers Infinity War, Thor Ragnarok. Woo-hoo. So good year on the movie side of things. And the best app of 2018 is Drops Learn 31 New Languages, which is not an app that we talked about here on the show at all in 2018, which I find hysterical.
Nobody here is trying to learn new language, clearly.
At all. So you can go just Google Play's Best of 2018. You can see the list of apps and movies and books and all that fun stuff. It's cool to see what the users think. And so, yay, Google Play 2018. All right.
I did think it was funny that Marvel almost got a clean sweep on the movies. Jumanji just snuck in there with one pick to upset.
Jumanji and Deadpool 2 was in there as well too, and I'm not going to comment still on any of these.
Real quick, before we get to our last ad of the night, we're going to do a quick little email. This one comes from Robert wrote in. I know you don't like SMS for two-factor because of what happened to Jason many years ago. But let's say I'm going to use it.
That was the best.
And let's say I have two phones with different numbers. Will I be able to use both numbers at the same time for TUFA? Love the show. Thanks in advance. You're welcome, Robert. Thank you for loving us. We love you too. And unfortunately, so two-factor is tied to a single phone number, so you can only use one at a time when you sign up for it. Now, if you're using multiple devices, we recommend using an app-based two-factor authentication app like Authy or Authenticator, and log in on both devices to generate the code when it's needed so that you can maybe use it on both devices. So just an easy little quick little run around. See if
I know the point of the question was they want to use phone numbers, but I'd be curious why they would be so married to SMS two factor. Why that would be
could be a business reason.
Advantageous. Know. Well, yeah, but I mean, like, I think also if it were like a corporate phone, one of them was a corporate phone, and you went to your IT department, they'd probably recommend not spreading out, you know, like trying to make two-factor less secure by adding numbers to a platform that's less secure than an app-based two-factor.
By the way, Scooter X in the chat mentioned that Authy syncs across devices, whereas Google Authenticator does not. So something to keep in mind.
There you go. All right. And that's a great segue to our next sponsor. We want to thank LastPass for sponsoring this episode of All About Android. And listen, data breaches happen daily and password security can't wait. You need to make every employee on your team a part of your security solution with LastPass Enterprise. It makes password sharing convenient for employees while keeping access to corporate data secure. Every employee has their own secure vault for managing and accessing passwords. LastPass Enterprise offers centralized admin oversight, including the ability to set master password requirements, enable password resets, and restrict access when needed. You can configure over 100 policies, access actionable security reports, and create shared folders. You can organize database logins, SSH keys, software licenses, and business information. The LastPass password generator makes it easy to use unique random passwords that employees don't have to remember or write down. And the password autofill functionality makes it easier for employees to seamlessly use LastPass across mobile devices. No more copy and pasting from your LastPass app. Don't copy and paste your password, people. Use LastPass. You can further protect your business with multi-factor authentication. With LastPass's authenticator app, a verification button pops up on an employee's phone to guarantee they're the only ones with access to their accounts. If credentials are compromised, the app ensures outsiders will not have access. Employees can log into LastPass with their Microsoft Active Directory credentials, and data is encrypted and decrypted at the device level. Data stored in the vault is kept secret, even from LastPass. And I've talked about it on the show a bunch before. Jason turned me on to LastPass a few years ago. I've been a loyal customer ever since. I got my wife on LastPass. I'm on LastPass. Our entire household is. It's the best way to keep track of our passwords and keep them secure and safe. So we are just two of 16 million people who trust LastPass, the number one most preferred password manager. In addition to the enterprise solution, they also offer LastPass Premium for personal use, LastPass Families for your entire family, and LastPass Teams for teams of 50 or fewer. So take control of your business passwords and reduce the threat of a breach. Learn more at lastpass.com/twit today. That's lastpass.com/twit and see which product is right for you. Thanks, LastPass, for keeping us secure. And with that said, it's time to get into the arena.
So many enter, but only one lives. Android Arena.
So, Flo, do you want to do this or do you want me to?
Well,
I might gloat a little.
Okay, so we're not going to let Ron gloat, but last week's results of the poll last week, episode 397, the winner happens to be safe at 42%. That puts Ron as number one from last week, which means that Ron goes last. In second place is my app, Hatchful, which was a logo maker. That was 24%. And then Go to Sleep and Level Up Life. Oh, well, on my screen it says 17 and 17, but here we have 16 and 17. Neck and neck. So that was last week. And Ron, would you like to read the results thus far of the score? I'm out, so I'm just figuring... You might as well.
Well, yeah, Flo, you're out. But that's actually very interesting results. Very interesting results, thanks to Wade County in the chat room. So we're 48 weeks through the year, and Flo and Jason are both out. Mm-hmm. Flo had 99 points now. Jason has 108 points. I'm in second place with 132 points, and the guests are in first place with 143 points. So Juan, no pressure, because
we're
at the point now where even though I've been getting consistent first places these past couple of weeks, I've been closing the gap. If the guests win this week, I'll be eliminated. So, now okay. Elected voters, don't use that to make your decision. Still vote on the best app. But Juan, you could eliminate me this week with a win. So we'll find out.
Man.
Flo, you lost.
Pressure.
You lost. So why don't you start it up?
Yep. So today I brought another app, Android app, that I'm using on my Chromebook. And I figured it was about time I bring this app into the arena. It's a super old app that's been in the store. Let's see how I can do this. Like this. So I don't know if you could see this little sleeping critter over here, but that's a little cat. And the cat is sleeping right now, my little Neko. But this app is called A-Neko. It's a super old app. It has not been updated since, when's the last time it was updated? 2011. But when it was released, I guess a lot of people were really into it. All this is a little, it's a little animated character that lives on your screen. It just sleeps on your screen. And I love using it on the Pixelbook because it adds like this little character, this little dynamic character that runs across when I'm working. And it's just like a nice, it's just a nice little cute thing. And the thing that I like about it is if I go into the app, look at this beautiful Chrome OS experience. Right here, it's a small app window. So if you go into this app window, which you cannot read, but I'll read it to you, you can actually download skins from the Play Store. And so as you can see, the little Neko is moving right now. He's running. I woke him up. But there's actually different skins that you can download. So I bought this skin today for, I used my Google Play Rewards money. This is a Skitty, which is one of, it's a Pokemon. So this, somebody had made this. This is like a fan made one, not made by this developer. And it just like runs across the screen and it sleeps and it does whatever. I also found this one, which is an Android bot. And little Android bot, just if you could see him here, he's coming up, crawling up the screen. So this is how I amuse myself. This is a Neko. By default, you get the cute little cat Neko. I don't know if those of you OG internet users remember this little cat, but it was like a little GIF that was circulating around the internet. Like you could just download it. And so it's basically that GIF that's existing in this little form. And it just exists on top. And on Chrome OS, it nicely, you can just minimize it. And it just runs in the background. No problem. There you go. A Neko.
Free. Important things. Cats. There it is.
You know, just a little happiness to add to your desktop.
I would not ever underestimate the cat vote, even on the tech show.
Also, this is what I try and do with Chrome OS. I try to see how much of a Windows PC experience I can add to it by downloading random things.
So. Like stopping just short of dual booting, but I will make it mine.
Exactly. I try. Juan, you're actually next. And we're going to do... It's because Jason's always in this seat, and I forget that... Let me get my phone.
Right on. If I'd had just one more minute, I might have tried to do like an actual co-stream of this just to show off my app. But my app for the App Arena is Streamlabs. Streamlabs. The little title is Streamlabs, Stream Live to Twitch and YouTube. Now, I've become a huge advocate for trying to do more stuff from our phones. And I feel like the whole mobile phone streaming landscape actually hasn't evolved as quickly as I would have liked it to. Back, what was it, like the Note 7 had a built-in YouTube streaming component, and eventually we got better streaming services directly from our phones. But for gaming, for vlogging, for broadcasting, for any of these types of solutions, Streamlabs works just like Streamlabs OBS, and you can actually use it as a remote control for a Streamlabs setup on your desktop PC, or you can stream directly from your phone. Now, I'm going to let you guys in on a little secret where Streamlabs can also use a custom server. So what you could do is sign up for an account on something like a service like Restream, restream.io, put in your Restream credentials into Streamlabs on your phone, and you could, from one device, with one outgoing data connection, stream concurrently to YouTube, Twitch, Periscope, any other service that utilizes those kinds of streaming servers. And the quality is going to be much higher than if you're trying to stream directly through like a Periscope app. You can control what your phone is putting out, what your phone is sending. You can use either of the cameras. If your cameras support stabilization, you can lock in stabilization. You can also screen capture. So again, I really think gaming phones could be a big deal if we got better gaming apps, but we already have the tools. If you want to do a Twitch stream directly from a mobile device, You have to pick up like a Razer phone and hope that that's going to work. You can do this from any decently powerful mobile device. Streamlabs, totally free to lock it in, to start using it. You can use it with individual services if you only want to use YouTube or if you only want to use Twitch. But just the fact that we can now co-stream, co-broadcast this efficiently off of one connection is phenomenal. And so next week, I think I'm going to do my podcast off of a phone and see if anyone notices, because these things are getting crazy powerful. And this is yet another tool that helps us migrate some of this type of usage from, you know, like a traditional desktop or gaming laptop or something like that to the computer that lives in our pocket. So I've been very impressed. It's been a really fun service to play with. And again, paired with a restreaming server, you can do some amazingly powerful things with it.
Oh, sorry. I was just going to start stream. But anyway, there you go. That's Streamlabs. Thanks, Juan.
Yeah. All right. So my app for this week, I asked Flo not to demo.
Yes.
And I'm just going to get to it. It's called Cover. And what it is it uses machine learning AI technology to detect and block NSFW content on your phone. Yes. So listen, I'm not going to judge anyone or talk about how you want to live your life. But listen, it's a reality of this world. These phones have cameras. People like to send things to one another. And the last thing you want to do is be in a meeting at work when that special someone in your life sends you a special photo and it pops up on your screen. This is actually, if you are in the world where this is something that could be useful, this is a very handy app. What it will do is it does a bunch of things. It will scan all the media on your phone and identify what is not safe for work content and then put it in a secure gallery that is separate from your other galleries that you can only unlock with a fingerprint or password. So that, on one hand, is great. Then what we'll do, you can see it in the Google Play Store screens and what it's showing, but it will detect not safe for work content that comes in via messaging apps or web browsers and blur them so the person looking over your shoulder can't see them or whatnot. And listen, I don't know if I travel a lot and I've been on planes and I've seen things, people. Mm-hmm. And I wish that those people use these phones, use this app. Because honestly, this makes a lot of sense if you're the kind of person who's inclined to receive this sort of content.
Or send it.
Yeah, exactly. So, to be clear, it's not sending any of your app to the cloud. It's not doing anything like that. It's the app itself is scanning to see whether your content is not safe or worth and then blocking it. That's all it's doing. It's all staying on your device. It's all quarantined and local and all that stuff. So don't worry about that. It's encrypted storage. So there you go. You don't have to worry about it being sent off somewhere else or anything like that. So it is called Cover Auto NSFW Scan and Secure Private Gallery. It's really handy when you think about it if you're that kind of person. And judgment if you are.
So. I wasn't laughing at you, Ron. I'm sorry. It was going through their.
Oh, I know.
For the hilarious audio listeners, the video accompanying this app is on the app page is very expressive. A lot of acting. Yeah.
So many people so mortified by safe for work images that are on their phone.
Listen, I mean, what's sad is that this is the world we live in now. And so
I totally get you. It's someone that's looking at their own phone going, oh my.
Oh my.
So there you go.
Sorry. Killing me. That was hilarious.
So Cover, Streamlabs, and Echo, they're all available to vote for. You can go to twit.to/AAApoll398. That's twit.to/AAApoll398. And you can vote for the app that you think should be the winner. And Victor, I'm very curious to see what you're going to vote for because, I think there's only one choice. But that's just
really? Me. Really, Victor? Cover. Just give yourself away, why don't you?
Just from those videos.
I mean, just video alone.
Just
right?
From their you got to give it up for their marketing.
Yeah, that's fair.
And I will call out Uncle Bick in the chat room says another good aspect of this app is that if your kids get a hold of your phone at the wrong time, or if you're in an environment where people are under 18 and shouldn't see stuff, I mean, this just seems smart. I feel like every phone should come with this.
Yeah.
So
who cares what mom and dad are into? Kids don't need to see it.
No judgment. No judgment.
No judgment. Juan, thank you so much.
We broke Juan. I love it.
Sorry, it was like that last thing. You're like talking about kids and stuff. You're like, okay, yeah, that did me in.
I mean, look, you don't scar your children, people. Download Cover. Juan, thanks for joining us today on All About Android. You have been such a great help for us on the show today with Jason out. Thank you so much.
Yeah, always happy to. I love coming to visit you guys. And Ron, the next time you're out here on the West Coast, we got to do it up for reals, man.
I mean, he is so close to you. Like, so close and yet so far.
I had cookies, man. We could have totally done up some cookies.
It's going to be amazing. Yeah.
Juan, you know, this is usually the point in time of the show where we tell our guests to go ahead and plug what you got. So if you want to plug what your mama gave you, please, now would be the time.
Right on. No, it's really, I think a lot of us are going to be in wrapping up the year territory. I've got some videos coming out on long-term reviews of phones like the V40, which we talked about a little today. Also spending a little time with the Huawei Mate 20, not the Mate 20 Pro, but the one with the built-in headphone jack, because I'm kind of into that thing. And then we're also starting to gear up for some CES coverage. We're talking about some of that on Newegg, the show that I co-host with Trisha Hersberger, who's actually down in Hawaii right now doing the Qualcomm Summit. So she's going to have a lot to say about Qualcomm's tech, and then also what we're going to be covering, some of the new stuff that we hope to see in Vegas. I can't believe we're already having conversations about what's going to go down in Vegas. But there's going to be a ton of content, lots of podcasting, lots of really cool shows, and some fun hands-on stuff with actually trying to make things. That's my big thing for 2018, and I think I'm going to carry it through for 2019, is you're going to spend $600, $700, $800, $900, $1,000 on a phone. Let's see what we can really do with it. Let's see how far we can push these things. And let's see if we could maybe start using our pocket computers as our only computers. So I'm going to be trying to push that in Vegas this year too.
Perfect. Thank you so much, Juan. Ron, I know you've got some things to plug.
Yes. I won't be in Vegas. Thank God. I could do without that city. But yeah, you can plug my latest. It's rough. You can check out my latest podcast. It's called Finale at finalepodcast.com, where me and my co-host, the wonderful Carrie, talk about the series finales of beloved TV shows that at least one of us has watched, and usually the other has not. This week we flipped the script, and instead we did a TV show that Carrie watched all of, and I watched House. Or House MD, as it's known. I'd never seen an episode of it, so we watched the last episode of it ever, and I tried to make sense of it. And let me tell you, it's not lupus. So go to finalepodcast.com, and you can subscribe to the show and check it out.
I mean, you just spoiled half of House.
Half like the episodes, half of, yeah. Nearly 200 episodes, 80 of which are about it not being lupus. But yeah. And you can go follow me on Twitter at RonXO on Twitter and on Instagram. Thank you.
Oh, good night. Boy. Well, I guess that leaves me as the last one here. I am also not going to Vegas because I'm going on a vision quest. So that's where I'll be the later half of this year. Wait, the later half of this month, which is almost the end of the year. So if you want to keep up with what I'm doing, just go to florenceion.com. That is my website. That is the flow feed. And I've got some blogging fun that I'm doing. I'm just kind of working on my own thing right now until the new year. So that's kind of where we're at. So just stay tuned there. I'll let you know where I'm writing, what I'm working on, and what's coming up. As for us here at All About Android, now you know that you can interact with us if you are a listener, a viewer, because we love you and we want to hear from you, especially if you listened to our gift suggestions little segment today. We want to know what you are buying your loved ones this year. So to get in touch with us, you can leave us a voicemail, 347-SHOW-AAA. You just spell that out on your phone pad and you can leave us a little message. Or you can email us at AAA@twit.tv. Or you can tweet us at Android Show. We've also got a whole list of all the apps featured in the arena at twit.to/Android apps and stats at twit.to/arena stats. Show notes and past episodes are available at twit.tv/AAA. And that's 3 for 3 A's. And you can come watch the show live if you're in Petaluma. Next year is a great time. If you are going to be here next year or towards the end of the year, you can come in. Maybe you want to watch our 400th episode, which is coming up in 2 weeks. All you've got to do is email tickets at twit.tv. Let us know you're coming. It's free. We just got to put a chair out for you. Or you can catch us live on the stream every Tuesday here at 5 p.m. Pacific, twit.tv/live. Thank you everyone for joining us today. Jason will be back next week. And until then, have a lovely week. Bye, everybody.
Bye.